On today's show, we're breaking down how a normal offseason will really, really benefit the Rangers, a few Rangers prospects being on Baseball America's top 100, and some owners in baseball making their teams look stupid, and it's not the Rangers. We'll get into all that and more on this episode of Locked On Rangers. Let's get into it.
You are Locked On Rangers, your daily Texas Rangers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are locked onto the Texas Rangers. I'm Bryce Patrick, a cripplingly addicted Texas Rangers fan since 2010, the founder and host for all four seasons of this Locked On Rangers podcast. Thank y'all so much for making Locked On Rangers your first listen every single day. If you're not already, you can follow me on Twitter at Bryce Patrick. You can follow the show at Locked On Rangers and subscribe on YouTube, where the best way you can help grow the show is to comment any single thing below. On today's show, we're talking about a pretty great article written by Evan Grant of the Dallas Morning News, some bits and pieces everywhere. So let's get into a little bit of that article, that one that Evan Grant wrote, that kind of made me think a little bit about this offseason just being normal, because that's where we are in the offseason. There's not a whole lot of news that has come down. The only news that that really even matters to the Rangers at all is that Adam Duvall signed, not with the Rangers, I believe was with the Boston Red Sox. Yeah, there's just one fewer option in left field free agency that the Rangers can go get. But go check out this article by Evan Grant. It was really interesting. It mostly focused on Marcus Semien, and I think there's definitely something to that. But he talked about how having a great facility is a really important part of him and his routine. I mean, that is one of the big things that we knew about Marcus Semien coming in, is he was a guy who plays every day, has a really, really great, structured, sturdy routine. And that's why he has been so successful, and I think why the Rangers were willing to invest more years in him than other teams were. Also, part of it was just having to overpay coming off of a terrible season to go get him. That also helped them land Corey Seager. But one of the notes in there is that Chris Young said that that Marcus Semien and Nathaniel Lowe have been among the players a little more vocal, taking a more active role in workout accountability. And I think that's really interesting, because one of the things we also heard about Semien when he came in is that he's not a very vocal leader. Same thing about Corey Seager. Both those guys, just absolute baseball grinders, baseball lifers that have their routine. They lead by example. They're not going to be the rah-rah ones in the clubhouse of, all right, guys, let's do this. We need a fiery speech about how we're not doing well right now and need to just get better. Now, they are the guys who are going to lead by being the hardest freaking workers on the team, getting in there, getting their work in every single day, being consistent about it, and other players will see them doing that and be like, oh, that guy gets here at 7 a.m. Maybe I need to stop getting in at like 9 a.m. when they're already done. Maybe I need to, see what he's eating, how he is taking care of his body, how that works out for him. Obviously, it's working out pretty well for him. But one of the things that Evan mentions in the article is that Marcus Semien has always been a very slow starter to the season. That's one of the things that's held him back. That's why he has only been on so few All-Star teams in his career, even in 2019, where he had one of his best years of his career, a 7-WAR season, finished third in MVP voting, but he didn't make the All-Star team because he has always started very, very poorly. I mean, part of that was, he didn't have the facilities like Texas does of these great workout facilities. We saw him coming up from the facilities, from working out, as well as a few other guys at Jacob DeGrom's press conference. But in his career, he has always started slow, which is part of why I didn't worry as much when he was off to the dreadful, horrendous start to the season. You look at his first half versus second half splits in his career. In the first half, he has a 740 OPS. In the second half, a 798 OPS. That is nearly a 60-point difference. His on base is 11 points better in the second half. He slugs 46 points better in the second half than in the first half, and his batting average is 9 points better as well. So a significantly better result in the second half once he finally gets going, gets into that routine. And I think that one of the points that Evan makes, and I wholeheartedly agree, is that being able to work out with these great facilities and have not have the turnover of the weird offseason that he had last year of signing a new contract and also having a 3-month lockout of being able to access the facilities and the coaches is going to help him a whole lot, and I think will help a whole lot of the young players being around and having that accountability. I think Nathaniel Lowe is also going to get off to a pretty hot start this year. He did all right at the start. Not a whole lot of Rangers did really, really well at the beginning of the season. Or really for the end of the season. It was more that kind of June swell where everybody kind of ticked up their game. Jonah Heim started off really well and kind of faded down the stretch because of the workload. But I think for the most part, it should help with the Rangers having a quicker start to the season. But I think it's more important, way more important for the pitchers. I mean, there have been really weird off seasons going into the last couple of years. I mean, heading into 2020, they had what was a normal off season, and then, you know, the pandemic happened, and getting ramping back up to the start of the shortened season, there were all the negotiations and all the guidelines that had to be put in place. Plus, guys couldn't really work out like normal at all, and just, you know, do whatever they could at their own facilities wherever they could get it because everything was shut down because of COVID. Then the next year they were kind of building back up after a shortened season. I think it was really, really difficult on the pitchers. We saw not a whole lot of guys being able to pitch very deep into games and not being able to pitch very often or as often as we've become accustomed to seeing major league pitchers. So the Jordan Lyles throwing 180 innings in 2021, even though they weren't great innings, was still very, very valuable. And then you head into 2022, you're like, all right, the Rangers have all this stuff happening. They have all these cool, great new players coming in. So maybe it'll be a normal offseason for them too. No, not the case. They had a 3-month lockout that delayed the season a week and completely wrecked the normal time frame of guys being able to get themselves up and get themselves ready to go for the start of the season. It doesn't affect position players nearly as much. That's why pitchers and catchers report a whole lot earlier in spring training. But these pitchers, no pitcher has had a normal offseason until this year since heading into the 2019 season. So it's been a long time. And you may have noticed that most of these, the two biggest injury-prone years of Jacob deGrom's career have both come with these super weird, non-traditional off-seasons. And this year, he knows where he's going to be. He has really great facilities to go and be a part of that. Same with these other pitchers who are coming off some injury-prone seasons, like Nathan Eovaldi and Andrew Heaney. Dane Dunning is getting to work himself back into form at the right time. And John Gray, I think, hopefully will have a little bit better of a season. But I really think that it's going to have a bigger impact on the health of these pitchers and their ability to pitch more often, more frequently. I mean, even Martin Perez, who was the, you know, the peak of health in terms of pitching this year, he still only went 4 innings in his first couple of starts because he really wasn't ready by the start of the season because this was such a weird offseason. I don't think the Rangers signed him until like the day after the lockout ended, which was like the beginning of March. So I think that is really going to have a very underrated positive boost for this Rangers pitching staff that does have a bunch of injury concerns, and I'm really excited to see how it plays out because they do have some depth, even if it's not as big a boost as I'm hoping. Coming up, we're going to look at the 3 Rangers that made Baseball America's top 100 prospects and a look at some of the owners embarrassing baseball and why the Rangers should feel good about their ownership group. But first, this episode is brought to you by Built Bar. If you're looking for a delicious treat, but you don't want all the fat and calories, then you have got to try Built Bar. We just got through the holidays, and I know my goal is to eat a little bit healthy this year. If you're like me and you want to eat healthier, but you don't want to compromise on taste, then man, I have got just the thing for you. You have got to try Built. With Built, healthy is actually tasty. Seriously, they're so delicious, you won't think they're good for you, but they are. It's perfect for your New Year's resolution. They come in unbelievably great flavors like churro, peanut butter brownie, coconut, almond, and the best part is you don't have to wait around for a box anymore going to built.com and, you know, checking for however long it takes for that box to get to you. I mean, you can do that. You can definitely still get your Built Bars that way, but you can also go pick them up at your nearest Walmart or Sam's Club and go pick yourself up a box of Built Bars. You got to try them. Thank me later. Go get some Built Bars. Now, let's look at the 3 Rangers prospects who made the top 100 Baseball America overall prospects. They are the first site to release their top 100 this year. MLB Pipeline has released a couple of lists that we'll get into in just a second. But the Rangers have three prospects on this list, and I think it's really indicative of how right I was on my own top three. No, but how big a leap this guy made. At number 26, yeah, that's right, 26, we have Evan Carter. At number 59, we have Josh Jung. And at number 66, we have Owen White. There is no Jack Leiter on this list. There's no Kumar Rocker. There is no anybody else on that list, Leiter or Luis Angel Acuña. I thought Luis Angel Acuña might get some love there. I understand Leiter falling off, and I mean, he fell off pretty far in my rankings as well, but I feel like it's a little bit reactionary. And one of the things that I think is really indicative of how frustrated or how much this season painted evaluators' opinions on Jack Leiter is if you look at the MLB Pipeline's top 10 right-handed pitching prospects, and Jack Leiter's not on there. Owen White's not on there. I'm more surprised about Owen White not being on there than Jack Leiter not being on there. The top right-handed pitching prospect is a guy named Andrew Painter, who is a 19-year-old in AA with the Phillies, who they drafted in the middle of the first round. Then you have Grayson Rodriguez of the Orioles, who's been a really, really good prospect, probably going to be a guy who Josh Jung is competing for Rookie of the Year votes with. Then there's Yuri Perez, a 19-year-old who's 6'8 in AA for the Marlins. We have a lot of the usual suspects with the top 10 prospects. It's kind of confusing and interesting that, I mean, there's basically only three, four teams that can actually develop pitching prospects. I mean, we all know who they are. It's the Marlins, it's the Guardians, it's the Dodgers, it's the Rays, and it's the Astros. Well, the Astros have one guy on there, that's Hunter Brown, but the Phillies have two guys. They also have Mick Abel, who is number 9 on this list, a 21-year-old in AA, 6'5 right-handed pitcher. And the last guy on this list is Gavin Stone, a 24-year-old in AAA, projected to get up to the big leagues this year. He is with the Dodgers. Last year had a 1.48 ERA in 121 and two-thirds innings, and I was coming here to look at his numbers and be like, oh, I don't know about this guy. I think Jack Leiter should be higher, but he had 168 strikeouts in 121 and two-thirds innings. That's a little bit better than Leiter. Yeah, he's only 6'1 and 24 years old and in AAA, former fifth-round pick in that 2020 draft. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of indicative of where Leiter and White are. I might put White above some of these guys on this list. There are obviously concerns about everybody. Hunter Brown is about 30 innings short of not being on this list at all. He's definitely going to be in the opening day rotation for the Astros, but it's kind of a sign of how good all of these pitching prospects are. You look at the left-handed pitching prospects. Kyle Harrison, a 21-year-old in AA for the San Francisco Giants, is up there. There are a couple other guys, or at least one guy in the division. Ken Waldichuk, a guy who Oakland got in the Frankie Montas trade from New York, who I kind of wanted the Rangers to maybe see if they can finagle a way to go and get him. He's a 25-year-old who's already in the big league, so I think it's a little bit cheating to have him on this list, but, you know, it's fine. They're still prospects until they've been in the big leagues for, I think, 50 innings is the cutoff for pitchers. But it's kind of an indication that the Rangers, as good as these guys are, it's I talked about it a lot yesterday. It's the strength of the system is in the depth. And the only other position that Pipeline has out, position player-wise, is first base. And yeah, shocker. There's no Rangers prospects on here. Tristan Casas of the Boston Red Sox is the number one first base prospect in all of Major League Baseball, according to MLB Pipeline. But I think this is a little bit reactionary to Jack Leiter. Owen White, I think there's definitely a case to be made of the injury concerns and the scares, and maybe even me putting White above Leiter. I mean, they each have their questions. Leiter has the command issues that have kind of surfaced and that I was a little skeptical of, and I was maybe more leaning towards Rocker at the initial draft, where the Rangers did pick him number two, because some of the walk concerns concerned me in Vanderbilt, what he did in college. He had a little bit higher of a walk rate than I would have liked for a guy who is not as big as Rocker and not the prototypical, you know, massively tall starting workhorse kind of frame. I would have liked a guy like that to have a little bit better command, but the stuff is still really, really nasty. And I think that we get caught up too much in what the numbers were and that he didn't get a whole lot better. And yeah, that's concerning. It's not a reason to drop him this far, I think. I mean, last year he was my number two prospect behind Young, and I think he's fallen all the way to four, which the three ahead of him are really, really good prospects. We also have to remember, it's his first year in professional baseball. It was Double A. It was a very aggressive assignment. Yes, he was a very, very polished pitcher. Yes, we thought he was going to kind of breeze through the system. I still thought that Double A was a little bit of an aggressive assignment, and the Rangers maybe wanted to get a little bit of like boost to some of the tickets, just to get boost to his ego. Just like, hey, I'm Jack Leiter. I'm going to start in Double A. I'm not starting in some stupid Single A. I think maybe that could have helped him a little bit starting somewhere where there wasn't all the eyeballs and pressure, but it's Jack Leiter. It's the number two overall pick. There's going to be pressure no matter where he was. So I think those rankings have been a little unkind to Leiter. I mean, putting him four, I feel like is fair. But I think that both of those guys in White and Leiter should have gotten a little more consideration. At least one of them, I think, should have cracked the top 10 right-handed pitching prospects on MLB Pipeline. If not, White, I definitely think... Wait, no. White did crack the top 100 in BA. So if he's number 66 on BA's top 100 and he's not in the top 10 right-handed pitching prospects, then I'm a little confused there. Maybe BA has him in their top 10 right-handed pitching prospects, but that's a discussion for another day. Coming up, we're going to look at two of the embarrassing incidents regarding recent MLB ownership snafus and why the Rangers should be kind of grateful for their ownership group. But first, this word from our sponsors. Now, the two incidents in question, in case you haven't been paying attention, in case you've been otherwise sidetracked by other more riveting news and not as obsessed with the random feelings around baseball. There have been a couple of incidents in the last couple of weeks, actually I think just in the last week, where two owners, the owner of the Orioles and the owner of the Reds, have kind of completely shown their butts lately. Orioles owner John Angelos, when he was taking over for his father, who also owned the Baltimore Orioles, a team that is in a decent market and has had a decent run of success right around when the Rangers were good in the kind of early 2010s and have fallen off the face of the earth, and then had a really, really fun year this year and have a lot of young talent and should be a promising team. They've got some questions going on around them. This event in question happened at a press conference on MLK Day. The reporters did not set when this was happening, but I think the owner wanted to talk a little bit about his charitable donations that were happening at the time. And also, I guess the baseball press can ask some baseball questions. And so John Angelos really got into it and took exception to a question from Dan Connolly of The Athletic. Connolly was asking about some of the turmoil in his family and how that might affect the team's situation. There is a little bit of a financial nonsense going on for some context. John's brother Lewis is suing him and their mother Georgia over control of the team and the family's law firm. The Orioles' lease with their stadium ends on New Year's Eve of this year, so it's a fair question, completely fair question to ask for a reporter. I feel like he asked it pretty delicately, and John Angelos did not like it. He talked about, I'm going to take you to task, and just really, really laid into him, and he talked about how this isn't the appropriate setting for a question like this. I'm not going to answer questions like this. It's MLK Day, so I'm not going to, like, using MLK as a shield, which is just embarrassing enough in and of itself, and it's just so absolutely ridiculous. And the annoying part is that when John took over for his father was a bit more of a recluse with Orioles ownership, just did not take questions, just kind of retreated from the public eye, which is an owner's prerogative to do. It's really annoying, and I feel like it's not a great way to be an owner, because you're just not facing any backlash, any repercussions for anything that you do. But John was like, no, I'm not going to be like my dad. I'm going to be more open in the public eye and, you know, more open to scrutiny. And this is one of the first times that he's been, scrutinized, and he just backlashes and uses MLK as a shield. And I did nothing wrong, blah, 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 blah. I'm not going to talk about all that nonsense. And it's just truly, truly embarrassing. And it feels like he was probably one of the owners that were content on just shutting the league down and that were not fighting for baseball to actually happen during that lockout. Like, there were a few owners that I think actually were fighting for the lockout to not happen, to be able to show off their baseball team and have baseball happen. One of the other owners who has been really, really embarrassing lately is Reds president Phil Castellini. He said the Reds at a little get together for Reds fans, kind of a fan only event. He was kind of surprised that this ended up leaking, because of course Reds fans will have their phones out and be recording, and this information will get out and get leaked to the press, and everyone will talk about it. But during this meeting, he was, one of the teams that has been the cheapest and the, I think, least well-run in all of Major League Baseball. But he said that the Reds were a non-profit organization, which is just absolutely ludicrous. This was the kind of garbage and nonsense that baseball owners were trying to, forced down the throats of baseball fans during the lockout of, oh, these poor greedy players, they're asking for millions of dollars. Don't we're not making any money. We just own baseball teams out of the goodness of our hearts. No, they don't. Otherwise, regular Joe Schmoes like us would be buying baseball teams and hemorrhaging money. Moderately wealthy people would be buying baseball teams and hemorrhaging money to, just own a really cool thing. But no, it's owned by billionaires. These billionaires who make so much money, and they get to hide behind, oh, well, our books are closed, so you can't see what we're really doing, so there's no way you know that we're making a whole bunch of money. We all know. You look at the TV contract, the massive, massive deals that were inked, and the amount of money that it took for Apple TV to get a one-year right to broadcast baseball games, how much money it took for NBC to get baseball games streaming on Peacock, just how much deals are worth in free agency, how these ownership groups are spending this year, a year after all of these teams were like, oh no, we can't afford to pay anybody. Oh no. Yeah, we know. We know that these guys can't afford to pay people, and that Reds president Phil Castellini just the year before got in trouble opening his mouth saying, ah, yeah, you Reds fans are going to suck it up. He tore down the team right after a year where they made it to the playoffs and was just like, suck it, fans. Where else are you going to go? Huh? You got nowhere else to go. So you suck, and we're going to do whatever we want, and we're going to be really cheap about how we build this team because we don't want to spend our money. We want to spend our money on buying ourselves fancy yachts and whatever else rich people buy. I don't know, because I'm not rich. After they buy their baseball teams to, have some other fun money. But I think Rangers ownership, and I've had some problems with Ray Davis in the past. There are a few other things of how he runs his organization and some general philosophical points that I have had some issues with. The way he ran off John Daniels, obviously I'm going to be bitter about that for a long time. And how he didn't commit the money that it took in some of the years where it's been more lean, when things kind of went off the rails a little bit after 2016, there wasn't as much investment. And I think that's why they kind of started their half measures on the teardown of trading Yu Darvish and Cole Hamels in 2017 and not really bringing in some other big free agents. And if they'd spent just a little bit more in 2019, I feel like that could have been a year where they broke the playoff streak. They made some really smart signings, and they had really, really great pitching. I mean, Mike Minor and Lance Lynn, both of those guys had two of the best seasons that any Rangers starting pitchers had. And, Ariel Jurado was the number three starter. But in recent years, I mean, Ray Davis has he been the best owner of the big four teams in Dallas? I kind of think he has. I mean, for the most part, he's stayed out of the spotlight, which again is his prerogative, not necessarily how I love an owner to run the team. I like there to be an occasional accountability, but maybe being as much in the spotlight as some of the other owners in Dallas have been is not the best look. But I think even looking around at the major four, then he's definitely the best one. Mark Cuban is always in the face of his teams, always in the public eye, always talking to the media, and very much cares about his team and has big input on how the team makes decisions. And we've seen how that can go awry. If you're a Cowboys fan, you know that Jerry Jones is the Cowboys are this is the best the Cowboys have been since the 90s, and Jerry Jones being very hands-on and being very embarrassing, being very open to scandal, as the rest of these owners have been as well. I mean, Stars owner Tom Gagliardi, just a few years ago, called his two highest-paid players horseshoot, but he didn't say shoot. He said a word I'm no longer allowed to say on this podcast. Mark Cuban had the awful, toxic workplace scandal that forced the NBA to come in and, you know, revamp how the entire business side did their operations. I mean, Jerry Jones, if you're looking for a Jerry Jones scandal, I mean, just... Throw a dart and you'll freaking find one. And as much as I've had some issues with Ray Davis in the past, he doesn't have that. I mean, he doesn't have that going around his team. And he is willing to spend money, and it seems like willing to be hands-off. And one of the best qualities you can have in an owner, first off, I think there's two main qualities. It's first off, being willing to spend money and having a deep, deep desire for your team to be good. Now, I think Jerry Jones has that. I think the Stars owner has that. I know Mark Cuban definitely has that, maybe to a fault. And it seems like Ray Davis has that too. It seems like he's committed to that. I mean, we've seen how much money he shelled out over the past couple off seasons. You don't do that if you don't want to freaking win, and if you don't care about winning. That's not a thing that happens. And number two, I think both of these are very important. I think equally important is the ability to be hands-off, the ability to trust someone who you hired to make baseball decisions, to be smarter than you at certain things, because not everybody can do everything. I mean, yeah, these billionaire owners, they're probably really smart at business. Like, they're really good at making money and making business deals and whatever. And baseball is a weird business. Sports are a weird business. There's a lot of nuance to it. There is a lot of things that go into being a good front office in any of these sports. But being able to say, all right, I trust you. I hired you. I like what I'm seeing. And I'm willing to commit to spending the money without having to be the one who dictates everything, how everything happens to a T. That's where things can kind of get off the rails. Like, I think that's one of Jerry Jones's biggest problems, Mark Cuban's biggest problems, is that they think, no, I know how to do business, so therefore I know how to run a sports franchise. And I think Ray Davis is kind of seen like, oh, there are some benefits to kind of being hands-off, to just, you know, trusting the guys who you hire. If they are doing a good job and they are meeting the benchmarks that you want, then you can just let them go do their thing and not have to be like, oh, I want this specific guy. Like, and we saw that with the White Sox and how the White Sox owner wanted to hire a very important baseball guy in Tony La Russa. And we see how terrible a decision that was. And I mean, when these owners just come down and hand down edicts without really understanding what's going on, without having the analytical mind, the expertise, and the amount of information and the lifetime devoted to learning how to run a baseball franchise, and just trusting the guys who do have that and giving them what they need, I think that is a super, super important way, a super a great way to run the team. And I think that that is one of the best things about, and one of the reasons that I have the most confidence that the Rangers can actually turn around this time, and I feel confident that they could have an extended run, because that's kind of what Ray Davis did in 2010 or 11. Whenever he took over the team, he kind of trusted John Daniels to run it, gave him what he needed to do to succeed, and gave him the resources needed. They said, signed off on making a Prince Fielder trade that ended up not working out, signed off on spending big money on Beltre when they missed out on Cliff Lee, and signed off on taking on Cole Hamels and signing Yu Darvish and all these other moves. And I think he kind of let it slip and kind of took it for granted. And after that 2016 playoff run, it's just like, all right, well, it hasn't happened yet. We haven't won our World Series, so I'm going to kind of pull back. And we saw the results of some middling teams that didn't embrace a rebuild, but also were still kind of half trying to go for it when it just was not the case that it was possible to go and do that. It's just half measures don't work. And the Rangers are very much doing full measures with this very much abbreviated rebuild of, you know, 2 years of sucking and only one of those years with a full 162 games. And I appreciate the commitment to that and the ability to kind of stay out of the front office's way and let them still provide them with the resources that they need. So, yeah. Nice to have an owner who is not completely showing his entire butt when several owners around the league are most definitely doing that. So shouts out to Ray Davis for providing that to the Texas Rangers. That's going to do it for this week's editions of Locked On Rangers. I'll be back next week to do a mailbag on Monday. So I'll be sure to tweet that out today or yesterday, whenever this is going up. So get in your questions there. Have some more episodes coming out later. And we're about a month away from pitchers and catchers reporting. So I am very much ready for all of that. So thank y'all so much for listening and subscribing. For your next listen, go check out Locked On MLB Prospects. Host Lindsey Crosby is a prospect encyclopedia. And he's going deep on MLB stars of tomorrow. I'm sure he'll end up talking about these Baseball America top 100 prospects, and maybe even about Evan Carter as well. So go check out that show if you like prospects. Thank you all so much for listening and subscribing. And until next time, don't forget to enjoy baseball.